support for OPB comes from our members and from our sponsors, like Mike Rosenberg from Columbia Credit Union. Mike says they trust what they see and hear on OPB, and that aligns with Columbia Credit Union's brand.
From the Gerd Boyle Studio at OPB, this is Think Out Loud. I'm Dave Miller. Recent data from the U.S. Agricultural Census found that over the last 20 years, there was a moderate increase in the production of conventional farm animals like hogs and chickens and a small decrease in beef cattle. But unconventional livestock plummeted. As reported by the Washington Post, llama numbers dropped 79%. Ostriches were down 83%. To find out why and to hear what this looks like in Oregon, I'm joined by Michael Lehman. He is a president of the American Ostrich Association and co-owner of Central Oregon Ostrich. Ron Wilkinson joins us as well. He is the president of the Central Oregon Llama Association and the owner of R&G Acres. Welcome to you both.
Thank you, Dave.
Michael Lehman, first, I mentioned this bust over the last 20 years, an 83% drop in ostrich production. I'm curious about the boom. What was happening 20 plus years ago?
Well, that was a lot of wishful thinking. In the early 90s, there was a huge push to bring ostrich into the United States as the next big red meat. Unfortunately, there was a lot of money behind it. It was a big speculation. But it failed rather dramatically in the late 90s with the loss of hundreds of farms. So, I mean, it really built up quick and it fell quick as well.
What were the reasons for the bust? I mean, what was the bet people were making and why did it prove so wrong?
Well, primarily it was yield. This was an animal that there was very little scientific understanding of as far as husbandry in the States, a completely foreign animal. You know, it's a South African in origin. And so while there was a lot of hype about, you know, what the productivity of the birds would be in particular situations, when they were brought to the States and tried to force them into Western farming practices, everything flew out the window. And the reason for that is ostrich are really not a domesticated species. They're a wild species. And in order to farm them, you have to farm them as a wild species. You can't just push them into, you know, Western farming practices and manage them the way you would ruminants or mammals in general.
I want to hear more about ostriches and why you got involved. But as I noted, Ron Wilkinson is with us as well to give us some understanding of the llama side of things. So was there a similar llama boom 20 or 30 years ago?
There was. Their llamas were kind of originally just available in game farms or zoos in the United States. And about 20 to 30 years ago, llamas finally took off in terms of being something that you could raise on an individual farm. And that really happened big in Central Oregon with the Pattersons over in Sisters. And since that time, there's been, it started out really kind of just as the ostriches, as a speculative venture where people were going to get rich quick with llamas. And over time, that didn't prove to be. Some people did, but most did not. And so the llama numbers dropped. And now the interest, I think, has increased more as they look at llamas as an animal of interest to people around the country.
And what are the reasons? I mean, what are ostriches raised for in 2024?
Well, the beauty of ostrich is that you have a carcass that's got so much utilization, right? It's got a great hide that's sought after for its leather. Back in the day, you had much more demand for feathers, and you've got a great meat product, right? So you've got a really nice meat animal. So and then of course that breaks out into offal and bones and things for pets. So at the end of the day, you've got a very high utilization per animal. And, you know, part of the problem was back when this was all beginning, back in the early 90s or late 80s, early 90s, the emphasis on some of these products was less, right? Today, there's pet food, for example. Pet products are huge. Yes, that's a huge market all by itself, much larger than it was back in the day. So,
meaning for the yield, raising ostriches partly to be ground up and fed to dogs?
Not the meat, because the meat has great value as an edible product, but the bones, the tracheas, there's all kinds of interest in those, because you're dealing with, again, you get unique body parts that make great dog treats.
Huh.
Liver, another piece. So back in the day, if you looked at the social kind of arrangement for farmed animals were pretty much for the meat. Right. Ostrich, the problem with doing leather on ostrich in a small operation is it's such a huge endeavor, and you literally can't make money in the United States tanning hides. So everything pretty much has to be shipped to China or Mexico. So what people ran into is, as far as taking advantage of the hides, is they simply couldn't compete with the South African market because of economics. Right. But.
Well, Ron Wilkinson, am I right that llamas have a lot more value alive than dead?
I think that's true. In the United States, llamas are not a main staple for food, where in South America, where they originate, they are one of the staples in that country, but not in this one. They're more of a pet or a companion animal in the United States. So people are raising them more as a companion, or something that's fun to use for hiking, packing, and then the fiber is of tremendous value.
Is the fiber, what can it be used for, and what are the competitors for the, do you call it wool, or is it called something else?
Well, we call it fiber, but we don't frown on people referring to it as wool.
Thanks for not frowning at me. So what is it competing against?
I'm sorry. So in the United States, probably the main competitor in the fiber area would be sheep. Hmm. And the llama fiber market has never been as developed as it needs to be. And I think it has probably the best potential of anything having to do with llamas in terms of that development. We have a llama fiber cooperative of North America that is working hard to try to expand that market and that availability of llama fiber. Hmm.
You mentioned that that they could also be sold as pets or companion animals. I've also read that they could be used as guard animals. What are they like as guard animals?
As guard animals, actually, we purchased our first llama as a guard when we used to raise sheep. And we were having a real trouble with coyotes and dogs attacking our sheep flock. So I picked up a llama at a lamb sale, actually. There were several llamas available at that particular sale, and we bought our first one as a guard. Llamas work as a guard primarily because their natural curiosity is such that if anything strange enters their area, they immediately go to that spot. If I look out of my pasture and I see all my llamas moving towards the fence or something, I look to see what's on the other side because something unusual is there. And so as a guard, their first way of intimidating is that they are just big, animal on a dog or a coyote or something of that size doesn't really want that big animal hanging over and coming over to check them out. So they leave from that standpoint.
So they're not necessarily aggressive, but they're big and they're sort of like huge bouncers who don't know jiu-jitsu.
That sounds good.
But is there, how big a market is there when you add up pets and companion animals and guard animals? I guess I'm wondering if you see this as a real growth industry or a kind of forever niche industry?
It's tough to say what the growth potential is. I think llamas have always been sort of, I don't know, a niche industry or a side industry or something of interest and novelty, I think. and probably will remain that in the long run, until particularly until that fiber market is developed and widespread. I think when that happens, things could change a lot. We aren't personally involved heavily in the packing industry and producing packing llamas, but that's been a real growth in recent years as more and more interest comes in terms of using llamas as packers to get to the backcountry and carry up to 40 or 50 pounds of weight that helps the back of the hiker who's trying to get into that country.
Michael Lehman, you mentioned that one of the problems in the 90s and early 2000s was that people were not raising ostriches as if they were wild animals. They were treating them more like domestic animals, like cows or sheep, which was a problem. So what does that mean in terms of the way you are raising your animals, your birds?
Well, it takes an entirely different mindset. We counsel new farms and people that are getting into the business or getting into ostrich to build their farm around the bird instead of building a farm and putting birds on them, right? Ostrich, again, being primarily a wild species, they've been small farm, managed forever, for eons, right? Way back into the Egyptian days, actually for meat. But never in a high intensity kind of environment that we normally think of productive farms operating in the Western United States, in the West. So when you put together an ostrich operation today, keep in mind the natural biology of the birds and meet that natural biology, which is things like they need to run in colonies, they need to run in large spaces. They need to have, kind of natural space to be ostrich in. And if you provide that type of environment and match that with the correct nutrition, you'll get great productivity out of them. It makes a really good fit for today's mindset in looking for sustainable agriculture, right? Because, more and more consumers are very much in tune with the humanity, right? The humane treatment that is being applied to the animals that are going into the food chain. And ostriches make a great fit for that, because literally to be successful as an ostrich producer, you have to raise them that way. You can't efficiently raise ostrich in an environment that is contrary to their own health and benefit, I guess, if that makes sense.
Ron Wilkinson and Michael Lehman, thanks very much for joining us today.
You bet.
Thank you.
Michael Lehman is the president of the American Ostrich Association and the co-owner of Central Oregon Ostrich. Ron Wilkinson is the president of the Central Oregon Llama Association and the owner of R&G Acres. Tomorrow on the show, math scores plummeted in Oregon during the pandemic, and they have not yet recovered. We're going to ask what it would take to change that on the next Think Out Loud. If you don't want to miss any of our shows, you can listen on the NPR app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you like to get your podcasts. Our nightly rebroadcast is at 8 p.m. Thanks very much for tuning in to Think Out Loud on OPB and KLCC. I'm Dave Miller. We'll be back tomorrow.
Think Out Loud is supported by Steve and Jan Oliva, the Rose E. Tucker Charitable Trust, and Michael, Kristen, Andrew, and Anna Kern.